Thanks for bringing that reading for us this morning, Roma. We continue to be given some advice about how to live positively in community together. You'll remember that last week that we had that massive list of things. Remember, about 15 or 16 different things about ways that we can be God's people in community together that came from earlier in Paul's letter to the Romans. Really practical things about how we operate. And part of what we were saying in different times and places last week is that if that's the kind of community that we want to be a part of, then we play a part in creating that community. I can remember years ago a guy who was coming into youth ministry in South Australia at the time and is continued in remarkable ways, actually, internationally since. In fact, he and his wife are two key people trying to work with government, just driven by their concerns that they saw as they travelled about what we call modern slavery. And so they've been trying to encourage our federal government to be passing laws and connecting with things that broaden our understanding about what modern slavery is, where people are perhaps brought in expecting one thing and then put to work in different ways. We hear stories about fruit pickers and people like that who go to work for people and then their passports are taken so they can't leave, you know, until the job is done, but also done fairly cheaply, and all sorts of incredible ways, let alone people that are forced into, virtually forced or economically forced at least, into working in incredibly poor conditions in other countries, and then we wear the clothes. You know, cheap t-shirts aren't really cheap. They've cost someone a huge amount. So, but this particular person, I remember him retelling that he hadn't found a congregation to settle in yet early in his faith walk. And he would go to one church for a while, then he'd go somewhere else, and eventually an older, wiser person sat with him and said, and he has an interesting name, his name is Fuzz. All right? Fuzz, what are you doing? And he says, well, I keep finding a church and then I find out that it's not quite good enough, you know, it's not perfect enough, so I go somewhere else because I'm looking for a perfect church. And this person said to him, well, mate, just remember, when you find the perfect church, please don't go, because you'll muck it up. And it's true for all of us, isn't it? We are imperfect, and yet there are times that we expect perfection from everybody else. And it was a classic bit of understanding for him that he realised that, well, yeah, if it was perfect and then he was thrown in the mix, his imperfection would spoil it. So we help create the community that we're a part of, and we create that community by contributing to it the sorts of things that we would hope to receive from it, because that's how culture grows. And amongst all the things that we might see and do and hold and believe, the culture of a group that we belong to, whether it's a congregation or anything else, will speak more than anything we put on paper. The things that people discover by engaging in the community that you and I create in this place will speak more than anything else that's said or done. So that's part of how we contribute. So Paul takes on board in the reading that we've heard today the great teaching of Jesus when he says, love your neighbour as you love yourself. That teaching formed as part of the answer to the question that was posed of Jesus, which do you think is the greatest commandment? And apparently for the religious leaders of Jesus' time, that was one of the great, you know, philosophical debates. Which is the greatest commandment? Remembering that they had much more than 10, right? We talk about the 10 commandments that are mentioned in the Old Testament. But then around those, the religious leaders over the centuries added more and more and more. There were probably between 600 and 700 in the end. And so this conversation around which is the most important commandment was one that would happen from time to time. And you'll remember that Jesus' response when he was asked that question was to say, love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. And the second is like it. See, Jesus always took the conversation to where it needed to be. So you've asked me what the greatest is. I'm going to tell you what the second greatest is as well. The second is like it. Love your neighbour as you love yourself. So here is Paul, someone who, remember, in the beginning of his journey was trying to dismantle everything that Christ had put together. but then because of his dramatic and remarkable conversion, now finds himself sharing with the people in Rome, love your neighbour as you love yourself, picking up that mantle of teaching and understanding. Earlier in this same letter, Paul reminds us in chapter 3 that all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. So that's a baseline in terms of Paul's understanding, that we're called to love our neighbour as we love ourselves, and all of us have made mistakes and fallen away in our relationship with Jesus. And we find ourselves at times arguing sometimes about which sin is greater than others, maybe not directly, but perhaps in the way we think about things and the way we engage with people who come. And it caused me to wonder, as I was thinking about that, I don't know if anyone else had an older sibling who sometime when you went to them for sympathy, you know, about an injury like a sore arm or something like that, or maybe you were probably not feeling sick, but, you know, an injury of some sort. Oh, you know, gee, my elbow's really sore. And then they'd kick you in the shin. Did you ever have an older sibling do that to you? You must have had really nice families. They kick you in the shin, you go, what'd you do that for? He said, well, you stopped worrying about your elbow, didn't you? Yeah. It's a distraction thing, right? I'll kick you in your shin, you won't have a sore elbow anymore, you won't think about it. There are times when we fall into that trap when we think about the mistakes that people make, sins that we commit, if you like, that we find ourselves in our understanding focusing on the things that are more terrible, and keeping an eye out for those things that are more terrible, and trying to make sure certainly that we don't commit those sins, but also perhaps treating people harshly who we might think commit those sins. And then we allow the little things, the everyday things, to slide. They sort of slip by because we're focusing on the big, well, the so-called big ones. Okay. I'm certain, however, from what Paul writes today, that that's not the way he thinks. Remember his comment from earlier in his letter, everyone has sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Everyone has made mistakes and their relationship with Jesus has been damaged, if you want to put that in different words. Paul wants us to make sure that we don't fall into that trap in the way that we think about ourselves and our mistakes. In this particular passage that we heard read today by Rilma, it seems incongruous to us that Paul would equate things like orgies, drunkenness, immorality and indecency with fighting and jealousy. When we think about trying to put things on some sort of, you know, graduated plane or continuum, they don't seem to fit together, do they? Because we rate one as being worse than another. And yet Paul is saying any mistake separates us from God. That's why he puts them together. There are times when we spend so much time getting worked up about the massive sins that we forget the little ones. So let's take some time to remind us about why Paul might do that. So remember that the aim, the target that we're shooting for is to be godly or to be Christ-like. Right, that's our target. And every so often we hit the target, we get it right. But you know that if you have ever participated, had a go at archery or perhaps firing a weapon, like I've never ever done that, right? But whatever you might participate in, that sometimes because the target is really small to hit, or hard to hit, that in those sort of activities, they make it a little bit easier, don't they? You know, you get something for just missing. It's like AFL. You know, six for between the big sticks. Oh, you nearly got it. We'll give you one, right? In real sports like football, soccer, you don't get one for that. Oh, did I say that? Sorry, I didn't mean to say that out loud. Right? But you get something for just missing. And the same with the targets too. If you participate in archery and you just miss, you get something for just missing. In fact, they'll even give you something for just missing. And if you look online and see what the targets actually look like, then you actually get something for just missing. So that's fairly generous, isn't it? But when we talk about understanding what a definition of sin, and there are a number, but one of the definitions of sin is simply to miss the target. We don't get it right. And it doesn't matter whether we just miss or we miss by a long way, the result is the same. Our relationship with God is damaged. If growing up I took even a small amount of money out of my dad's tin that he kept beside his bed without asking for it, then I was in the same trouble with Dad as when I crashed his car. Because both of those things damaged our relationship. And in the age that I grew up, probably a bit like yours, physical discipline was not uncommon, right? That was just part of growing up. But I can remember the thing that hurt even more was when one of my parents looked at me and said, "Peter, I am just so disappointed." Do you remember any of those moments? I won't ask if it happened to you. But this is what we're talking about, that when we make our mistakes in the way we live, when we fail to be the kind of people that God is calling us to be, we miss the mark. That's why confession is important, not just, you know, in the few minutes on a Sunday when we share that prayer at the start of our worship, but taking the opportunity when you recognise that you've made a mistake in your relationship with God and how you be God's person to ask God's forgiveness. We can do that any time we like. But this whole idea of this is what sin does for us is why jealousy and fighting can sit alongside those other things. And if we go back to the idea that this is following on from Jesus, from Paul talking about how to be a fruitful, growing, helpful, loving, engaging Christian community, then jealousy and fighting are two of the things that can rip that apart without any trouble at all. It doesn't have to be any of the big things, so-called. Jealousy and fighting will do it quite quickly enough. So this is why Paul speaks this way, because they can erode a positive, inviting, attractive community in a moment. "You know that the time has come," he says, "to wake up from your sleep, for the moment when we will be saved is closer now than when we first believed. The night is nearly over. The day is almost here." Do you know those times when you're waiting for sunrise to come? Maybe you've got something special to do that day. Maybe it was a long time ago and you were a child and, you know, it was your birthday, or you were going on holidays, or someone special was coming. And when you'd gone to bed the night before, Mum or Dad had said to you, "Tomorrow, they'll be here tomorrow." And you wake up through the night waiting for it to be tomorrow. Have you ever had those moments? I can remember one time being away with a mate and we were going to go fishing at dawn. And I got up and I started getting myself ready at like 3 o'clock in the morning. Of course, I mistook the street light outside for the sun rising. I was so keen to go. Those times when we anticipate the lighting of the next day. That's what Paul is getting at. The night is nearly over. The day is almost here. The day when Christ will be present with us again, in body, in flesh, side by side. Let's stop doing the things that belong to the dark, he says, those mistakes that separate us. And let us take on the weapons for fighting in the light. Striving to be Christ-like. Faith, hope, and love, Paul reminds us in his letter to the Corinthians, are the three things that remain. These are the things that we participate with as key things, striving to be upright as God's people. And that's what brings us to these comments just briefly from Matthew. The previous statements in Matthew chapter 18 have been talked about, once again, talking about how to be the people that Christ wants us to be. Initially, he talks about being like a child, having humility, and then about not being a stumbling block. Do any of you have one of those garages where the car only just fits in? Has anyone else got one of those? You know, it's not quite long enough. Yeah, a couple. So for us, we resolve that problem on my side of the garage anyway by putting a brick on the floor. Right? So the wheel rolls up to the brick, Doesn't go any further. Right, okay, I mean, I can put the garage door down, the back of the car's in. The problem is when the car's not there and you're carrying something or in your, and you forget about the brick. All right? So there's two things that happen there. One, you nearly fall over because you kick the brick. The second is you've got to make sure you've got it back in the right place when you put the car in. So the next time you've got to stop and get out and check. But we're told not to be a stumbling block. We're told not to be a barrier in the way we live, the way we talk, the way we engage with other people. We're told not to be a stumbling block that limits someone's capacity to engage with Jesus. And the other one that precedes what we've heard today is the lost sheep, where they leave the 99 and go to find the one. But once again, that seeking and saving the lost is really important. These are the stories that precede what we hear today. All of these are about making sure that the way to Jesus that each of us is a part of is opening up that channel, making it as straightforward as possible for people to see and recognise Christ around them. And that's why Jesus is saying the way we resolve our differences and maintain the life of our community is so important. And we believe in a Reformed theology and in the life of the Uniting Church that Christ is seen most clearly when we are together. A mosaic of the little glimpses of the way we follow Jesus that each of us get right, that we can take each of those parts and put them together and we create this wonderful mosaic of who Jesus is. The light shines and reflects off those little pieces of who we are as faithful followers so as to light the way to who Jesus is. And it oversees, in a sense, the various bits that we get wrong. Because just as we all get bits right, we probably all get bits wrong. But as a community, we can shine that light more fully and more clearly as Christ's people. So you can see the process that Jesus shares in this passage today is incredibly important. If you've fallen out with someone, if you have a damaged relationship, you're encouraged to seek that person out and to strive to resolve it. And if they won't listen to you, then you're encouraged to try again. Perhaps take another friend with you to help understand. But it's not about ganging up two on one. When I think about that process, I think about someone who will come and help me listen to the other person as well, perhaps. Maybe I'm not hearing what they're saying. And I need someone to help me hear as well as help the other person hear. You understand? It's about striving to resolve those things. And it's about taking the initiative, whether you're the person that's caused the hurt or the one who's been hurt. As soon as we recognise that there's been a breakdown in a relationship, we're encouraged to seek to mend it and to do that well. Because if Paul is right, and certainly I think he is, in one aspect if not in another, that the night is almost over, and I'm not talking about the end of the world stuff, but it is very clear that the things that we would say and hold dear about who Jesus is are now held by not so many. Certainly, it's not the strongest voice we hear in our community, broader community. And so that's why the light that we shine becomes even more important, and perhaps why the light that we shine might bring something of the day into someone else's life. It's time to be seen and known. It's times like these in which we live that living as a person of faith really swims against the cultural tide. It's important for us to step out of the shadows, to be seen as God's people, so that others might be drawn to know and love him as well. Amen.